on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com. And for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today's Friday, December 12th, 2025. We don't really have much Fridays left in this year. We really only have two more Friday shows before we are diving deep into 2026. And what a year it has been. What a crazy, crazy, crazy year. And you know, sometimes I think it's great to reflect on things that you've learned, on things that you're going to bring into next year, and really take stock of all that has happened around you. That being said, I want to mention a quick heads up, an invite, that this year we did something brand new. We will be bringing you, exclusively to our YouTube channel, the first ever InvestTalk holiday special. And that drops on December 18th. Honestly, we filmed it today. It was really, really fun. I think you guys will enjoy it as well. It's an end of the year episode where we look back at the biggest market themes of 2025, highlight a few lessons, and talk about our caller question of the year. As I mentioned, to watch the InvestTalk holiday special, head over to YouTube and search InvestTalk with two T's, or use the link in today's show notes. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe and hit that bell so you don't miss it on December 18th. Alrighty, back to the show at hand. In just a bit, we will go over today's market performance and run down those show topics. But let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, this is Dan from Walnut Creek. I have a question about Vertiv Holding, stock symbol V as in Victor, RT. If you can provide me with any input on this, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Vertiv Holdings, Inc., that is ticker VRT, is a digital infrastructure equipment and services name. So think data centers, communications networks, industrial environments, and power management systems. So really, they have been a big beneficiary of the data center boom. And you see that year to date, up 42%, up 20% over the past 3 months, up 29% over the past 52 weeks. And that is in spite having a big, big decline today, down 9.73%. But a lot of that is really just what we saw broadly across that AI theme in both hardware and in software as well. Now, it's a bit of an expensive name, trading at 34.5 times price to forward-looking earnings, well above the average of where it's been over the past 5 years. But I mean, the reason why it's up so much is look at this explosive growth coming out of 2020. $4.3 billion in revenue in 2020, projected to be $10 billion this year. At the same time, net income has grown from being negative in 2020 to reaching $1.6 billion, is where it's projected to be this upcoming year. While margins have expanded at both the top line and the bottom line, you see gross margin expanding, you see EBIT margin expanding, net margin expanding, return on equity up to 42%, projected to where it's supposed to be this year. And so, you know, the question is, okay, going into next year, is the CapEx trend going to continue amongst the hyperscalers? You know, this isn't a name that is going to try and monetize AI, but rather it's one of those picks and shovel names that has done particularly well. And they've taken a lot of this success, a lot of this cash, and they have started to reinvest it within their business with acquisitions. It is a fairly large company too, $69 billion market cap with a little bit of debt, but not too much, only about $3 billion. But again, $1.2 billion in cash on its balance sheet. And so, you know, I think if you're trying to attack the secular growth theme that is AI, this was a great way to do it. I mean, obviously, it's up 42%. Is this drawdown an opportunity to buy into it? Well, if it's a broader rotation, probably not. It's still trading at 34 times price to forward-looking earnings, still trading at 44.8 times price to cash flow. And so it is still a bit expensive, but definitely a good company that I would certainly keep my eye on headed into the next year. That is Vertiv Holdings, ticker VRT. Got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all. My main focus point concerns this story, institutional window dressing season. As the year closes, mutual funds and hedge funds engage in window dressing, which is the practice of buying winners and selling losers, and they do it to make their quarterly reports look good. So this kind of creates some artificial price movement. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about four other things that tend to happen at year end and what it all means for you. We'll also touch on the oil market and how supply surge is going to hit demand lows. And what does that mean for prices in 2026? Also, I tried to talk about silver on Wednesday. Didn't quite have the time, so we'll try and tackle that today. And that story that I've been trying to bring you for a couple days now on bond investors and their reaction to the Fed finalists. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Goldman Sachs. The Goldman Sachs NASDAQ 100 Premium Income ETF, that is ticker GPIQ. Another on the Global X Data Center and Digital Infrastructure ETF, ticker DTCR. As well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully some live calls throughout the show. We are going into a break, our first break. Please remember you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on. I'm going to talk about today's market activity when we return.
For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce a high-value, limited-time offer, the Holiday Estate Bundle. It's specifically designed to help new households quickly establish a solid foundation for their financial and personal legacies before the year ends. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit, and it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com. And while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART. The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Negative day overall for markets. The Dow was down 51 basis points. S&P 500 down 1.07%. NASDAQ, big underperformer, down 169. Small caps, Russell 2000, down 151. And with that, the S&P and NASDAQ now logged declines for the week. AI enablers, high beta stocks, all weaker across the board. Big tech as well was mostly lower. NVIDIA, the notable decliner amongst that group. Industry-wide, it looks like semis, software, networking, communications, energy, some of the worst performers of the day. Relative outperformers included managed care, restaurants, airlines, pharma names, and insurance. On the bond side, treasuries came under a bit of pressure. We saw the curve experiencing what's called a bear steepening, yields up about 5 to 6 basis points. 5 to 6% would be crazy. 5 to 6 basis points at the long end. Same time, dollar index ended little change after the sharp drop that we saw yesterday, while gold finished up 40 basis points in what was pretty choppy trading, again, following a massive gain of about 2% on Thursday. One of the stories we're talking about later, oil. Crude oil settling down 30 basis points on the day. But the big story was and continues to be tech's weakness, despite what was largely some pretty favorable AI-related takeaways from Broadcom's earnings. But the bar is high, and disruption and dispersion continue to gain traction in the broader AI theme. Unlike the recent trend, market's not really finding much cushion from the rotational dynamics. You saw cyclical rotation has really been the big story as of late, especially with help coming out of December's FOMC decision and meeting. On the data front, nothing really on the economic calendar today. It was a busy day of Fed speak, though. Chicago's Goolsbee said he dissented amid a lack of inflation data, saying waiting until January presented little risk, adding he was optimistic rates can come down a significant amount in 26. Kansas City Schmid said his dissent reflects his continued belief inflation is too high and policy should remain restrictive. And again, some more Fed chair drama. The president saying he's leaning towards either former Governor Warsh or White House advisor Hassett, adding, critically, the next chair should consult with him on rates. Looking ahead to next week, another high-profile macro week with the November NFP non-farm payrolls on the 16th and November CPI on the 18th. NFP expected to attract even more attention in the wake of Jerome Powell's comments about data quality and how the Fed staff estimate payroll growth currently being overstated by 60,000 jobs per month. We'll also get Empire Manufacturing, NAHB Housing Market Index, retail sales, existing home sales, University of Michigan sentiment and expectations, also all on the calendar for next week. Busy week next week as we head into the holiday. It is Friday, which means I briefly want to mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed to subscribers tomorrow. In the KPP Insights section, we discussed the Santa Claus rally and how that might apply to this year. Stock Ideas section, we mentioned a retail company as well as a home improvement company. And in the Portfolio Management section, we touched on differences between ETFs and mutual funds. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. For subscribers, the newsletter will hit your inbox on Saturday afternoons. Alrighty, it's been a while since we answered one, so let's add a caller question now.
I was wanting to get your opinion on KBWB, it's Invesco Bank ETF. I was wondering where a good entry point on this would be, or if we're getting close to a good time to start picking up financial bank stocks. Your input is appreciated. Thank you.
KBWB is the Invesco KBW Bank ETF. What they do is they try and provide exposure, pretty broad exposure to the U.S. banking market. So they have a portfolio that includes money centers, regional banks, and some thrift institutions as well, all of which must be traded within the United States. Over the past 1 year, up 27.72%, up 33.04% year to date, up 7.65% over the past month. Fairly, decently large fund, about $6 billion is the assets under management. Clocks in at a net expense ratio of about 35 basis points. Now, typically when you have banks, you expect to be a bit more on the value side, a bit higher dividend yields here, and you certainly are seeing that a bit. 2.36% is the dividend yield of this ETF. Price to book sitting about 1.48%. As mentioned, U.S. traded companies, so 83% of the revenue from the United States, concentrated within the banking sector. And because of the dominance within banking, large caps make up 94.68% of this portfolio. Mid caps coming in at 523. Now, it is a pretty concentrated portfolio. The top 10 makes up about 61.54% of the whole portfolio, and it's only 26 names, right? And so you know these top names: Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, JP Morgan. And taking a look at this, I can tell it's not market cap weighted because JP Morgan is the biggest out of this whole bunch, when in this portfolio, it's only the fifth largest name. Let's take a look and see how we do this. So they use a capped modified market weighting strategy that comes close to matching the top heavy nature of this segment. Interestingly enough, though, that JP Morgan comes in where it is compared to Goldman Sachs, which is on top there, meaning they probably look at different industries within banking a bit separately. I think, and this tends to be my advice here, when you're talking about an ETF that gives you 61% exposure to 10 names, when you're talking about an ETF that only holds 26, that is more of a black box about how they have determined weightings, And they're attacking primarily U.S. large cap names. Frankly, 35 basis points, a bit too expensive. You can do this yourself. So I like the idea. I think that with credit loosening, obviously QE is a thing now as well, with rates at least coming down a bit, banks stand to benefit. But should you pay 35 basis points to essentially hold 10 of the largest banks? Probably not. Thanks for the call. We're headed into a break. My main focus point coming up next, along with more answers to your finance and investment questions. So stay with me here on Invest Talk. The number of data breaches worldwide rises every year, going up by 211% from 2023 to 2024, due mainly to five mega breaches. Scams, identity theft, they all start with your personal data being exposed across various websites. It's on people search sites, in data broker databases, shady directories, AI answers, and even search results. That's the part most people don't see. Their home address, phone number, email accounts, and social security number aren't just leaked. They're being actively bought and sold by bad actors. But you can protect yourself now with Incogni. Incogni tracks down and removes your personal data from multiple sites, including online directories, people search sites, and even commercial databases. The Incogni process is fully automated for hundreds of known data brokers, companies that collect and sell your data without your consent. The categories of data brokers Incogni covers include marketing, recruitment, health information, risk mitigation, financial information, and people search sites. With Incogni, you can protect your privacy in three easy steps. Remember, they can't harm you if they can't find you. So, take back your personal data with Incogni. Use code INVESTTALK to get 60% off annual plans. Go to incogni.com/investtalk. You can also find the link in the episode description.
Now, with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Institutional window dressing. Sounds a little bit fancy, but in reality, it's one of the problems that really faces markets in December, and December 2025 is shaping up to be one of those rare months where almost every major market force converges at once, creating conditions that can define the tone pretty early for 2026. You've got the Fed's final meeting of the year, you've got critical inflation and labor data, you got heavy seasonal flows, and you have fewer trading days, all colliding in a very, very tight window. And that combination alone explains why markets often feel unstable or even irrational as December unfolds. And so understandably, investors are pretty deeply split on whether the Fed cuts rates while the bond market and Fed officials continue to send mixed signals. Inflation is cooling in some areas, but remains sticky in others. And consumers are still spending, but clearly showing fatigue. And that uncertainty means that every data point this month carries extra weight because it feeds directly into rate expectations. Now, the first major signal that we've seen in December comes from Black Friday and Cyber Monday spending, which gives the Fed an early read on demand strength. Strong spending supports a higher for longer narrative, while weak numbers immediately revive expectations for rate cuts. That data sets the psychological tone heading into the Fed's December decision. It's just one of many factors affecting markets this year. Labor data has added fuel to this fire because jobs remain the Fed's primary signal for whether policy is really tight enough. Weak unemployment report, all of these factors, all these macro events are compressed into fewer trading days, and so price action can become exaggerated and even abrupt. That's one of the things that drives prices in December. That's one reason why stock prices often behave strangely at the end of the year. Another reason, liquidity thins out as traders step away for the holidays. With fewer participants, even normal-sized trades, they can push prices much further than usual. On top of that, you have this institutional behavior that starts to dominate market flows. this window dressing. Funds sell losing positions to lock in tax loss harvesting and buy winners to make portfolios look better in year-end reports. It creates this rotation that has little to do with fundamentals and everything to do with calendar mechanics. You can often tell these moves apart by looking at volume and looking at follow-through. If a stock spikes or drops on low volume and reverses quickly in early January, it was likely driven by this positioning rather than new information. Genuine moves tied to earnings power, macro shifts, they tend to hold their gains once normal liquidity returns. What's another clue that something is looking a little weird that might be part of this window dressing? Well, if multiple stocks in the same sector move together without news, that often signals this institutional rebalance rather than the stock's specific conviction. So we've talked about a couple things. A bunch of data coming in at the end of the year. This year specifically, the Fed making certain moves. A lot of retail investors going, you know what? The year's over. Time to spend time with my family. And then this institutional window dressing. And so for individual investors, this kind of raises an important question here about whether late December is a bad time to buy stocks. Now, as with everything, there's caveats here, right? The answer is not a blanket yes or no, but it does require a bit of caution. Buying into sharp year-end momentum without understanding the source of the move can expose you to those quick reversals in January. And at the same time, forced selling tied to tax loss harvesting can create temporary mispricing in fundamentally sound companies. That's why, more than any other month, late December often rewards patience more than urgency. Watching how stocks behave once January liquidity returns is often more informative than reacting to December price swings. In short, December markets, they're not broken, they're distorted. By timing, by mechanics, by emotions, and understanding that this dynamic is often the difference between protecting capital and chasing noise. And so we always stress to investors that there is a lot of noise out there. And the toughest thing is to discern what is signal and what is not, what is important to your portfolio and what is not. So, pay particular attention, understand the confluence of events that tends to drive markets in any December, but especially this December, and prepare yourself as we head into 2026. Speaking of heading into 2026 and preparing yourself, if you haven't already, head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Over on YouTube, search InvestTalk with two T's. One of our latest posts, I think, is a very important one. And it is an update for you on what you should be thinking about with regards to taxes. That's right, our latest InvestTalk Wealth webinar was about our year-end tax toolkit for all investors. It went through what is changing heading into 2026 from tax law because it is a particularly important year, and what types of things you should look to recognize this year versus delay into next year, and how various strategies can prepare you not just in December for tax season, but all year long. That webinar, including all the Q&A, is posted now on our YouTube channel. On the next Invest Talk, we will dig into this topic, global divergence, Europe stalls, US chugs along. Recent data shows that the UK economy is shrinking and German industrial production is stalling, while US PMI data remains robust. This divergence suggests the US remains the cleanest dirty shirt in the global economy. Will that continue next year? That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment, an Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, Brian from North Carolina here. I'm a big fan of the show. I haven't missed an episode in over 5 years. And I wanted to get your take on an ETF, DTCR, Global Data Center and Digital Infrastructure. I was curious, would this be a good way to gain exposure to the picks and shovel part of AI? I know it holds some REITs, some non-REIT companies. It's pretty well diversified domestically and internationally. And I am after growth, but the dividend is cherry on top. It has a dividend of 1.3%. And also an expense ratio, 0.5, right? Do you think I'd be better off just picking some of its holdings that do have a higher dividend without the expense ratio? And also, the ETF has really only been around for 5 years, right? So is 5 years enough time to determine if the ETF is ran properly? And I look forward to hearing your answer, and thank you guys for what you do.
DCTR is the Global X Data Center and Digital Infrastructure ETF. It invests in firms from both developed and emerging markets that derive a bulk of their revenue in data center REITs and digital infrastructure. So you're looking at ownership, operation, and development of these data centers, as well as some exposure to cellular towers. Past 1 year, up 27%, up 31.50% year to date. As the caller mentioned, 50 basis points expense ratio and just under a billion, well, significantly under a billion in assets under management. Looks like $743 million is where it sits as of the close today. Pretty well diversified, I would say, in terms of revenue, right? 45.75% comes from the United States, a bit from China, 17.95%, and then a bunch of other countries as well. 7.6 from Europe, 38.94 from Asia Pacific, and pretty well diversified across the size spectrum. 64% coming from large caps, 24% from mid caps, 6.63% from small caps. And a lot of these names are familiar names. Digital Realty Trust, American Tower Corp, Crown Castle, some very large REITs in here. And remember, REITs tend to be a bit rate sensitive, so big changes, unexpected changes can certainly be something that hurts performance, let's say. Sometimes words escape my brain, but we got it out there. So, am I concerned a bit? Well, top 10 makes up 67% of the portfolio, only holds 26 names. I think we find ourselves in a very similar situation to the financial ETF that we looked at earlier in this show, where you're paying pretty decent clip, 50 basis points, for a fund that is primarily just US REITs. And so I'm going to give the same conclusion here that I gave in the other one. If you're looking at ETFs that hold so few names that are so top heavy, I think it is probably ill-advised to pay an expense ratio like this in order to get exposure that you could really get yourself by holding a handful of names in a diversified way. That is DTCR, apologies, the Global X Data Center and Digital Infrastructure ETF. Now it is Friday, and we try and fit in a little bit of time to give you a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. 2-year treasury yield is at 3.528% today. Last week it was 3.554, and 206 weeks ago it was 0.64. 10-year yield, 4.19%, compared to last week when it was 4.129. 204 weeks ago, though, number was 1.762. Gold, $59 higher than last week, sat at $4,297 per ounce. 19 weeks back, that number was $3,348, and 198 weeks ago, that number was $1,806. Silver came in at $61.90, that is $2.91 higher than last week. Substantially higher than 96 weeks ago, and it was $22.80, and higher still than 190 weeks ago, when it was $23.94. Oil, $57.62 per barrel today, $2.76 less than last week. 64 weeks back, it was $67.79. 106 weeks back, it was 74.30, and 205 weeks ago, that number was 66.62. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $2.93 today, 4 cents lower than last week. 132 weeks back, that number was $3.56. 180 weeks back, that number was $4.25. Looking all the way back to 100 weeks, close to 4 years, a gallon of regular gas cost $3.57. In California, it was averaging $4.39 per gallon, 10 cents less than it was last week. 110 weeks ago, that number was $5.32. 186 weeks back, that number was $5.87. For comparison, in the great state of Iowa, gas is averaging $2.50 per gallon today. That is $2.19 less than gas in California. I think that's a pretty good segue, because one of the world's largest commodity traders sending out a bit of a warning that the oil market could face a super glut. Their words, not mine. A super glut. That sounds horrible. I don't even know what that means. But next year is when this super glut is expected, as a wave of new supply collides with a slowing global economy. This assessment says that it's hard to avoid a surplus scenario with aggressive drilling projects ramping up just as demand growth starts, or rather continues, to weaken. Brent crude is already down 16% this year, on track for the worst performance since 2020, and fresh supply from Brazil and Guyana is expected to add a bit more pressure into next year. But on top of that, China, the world's largest oil importer, a key swing factor, is seeing sharply reduced electric vehicle adoption. Or rather, that the adoption of electric vehicles is sharply reducing the demand for gasoline. This is slowing future consumption growth. Low prices have also encouraged China to buy crude for its strategic reserves, but that buying would need to stay pretty elevated just to delay this supposed super glut. Now, the U.S. is also a big contributing factor here. Right, President Trump is pushing a renewed drill baby drill agenda, which is aimed at boosting domestic production. And so supply is and should be coming online. Against that backdrop, right, Trafigura, this analyst, or where this analyst is from, posted net profits of $2.7 billion, slightly lower than last year, and the firm's weakest results in 5 years after a period of war-driven windfalls. Metals trading was a bit of a bright spot for them, with the record profits driven in part by shipping copper into the U.S. ahead of tariff disruptions and shifting trade rules. But that's all to say that there's been a bit of a reshuffling amongst the commodity market. We've been talking pretty much every day about gold, right? Gold has been surging for the better part of 2 years now. We've spoken about copper, the demand for copper as an input to from everything from data centers to power infrastructure to electric vehicles. And now we're talking about oil, because oil could be moving in the opposite direction. To manage this strain, right, a lot of oil companies have been thinking about paring back some share repurchases from what could potentially be a fall in revenue. We're already sitting in the high 50s. Is it possible that oil could dip into the mid 50s, maybe even the low 50s? Could that be a historic opportunity to pick up stock in oil companies that might suffer from this continued slump? Either way, something we actually talked about on the holiday special when we filmed it today, oil, other commodities, likely to be a critical theme heading into 2026. Let's keep things moving and hit another question that came in earlier to the InvestTalk voice bank.
Hi, my question today was about Fifth Third Bancorp, ticker FITB. I don't have any exposure to finance, so I was just looking to see if this is a bank that you guys think could be good, and if so, at what price. So just whether you think this was something that'd be good to add a position, or if I should be more patient, and if I should be more patient, kind of a good time frame to wait before getting in. I'm looking for your answer on the podcast. Thanks as always, guys. Bye.
Fifth Third Bank is a regional bank, about $31 billion market cap regional bank. And it focuses really on consumer and small business banking, as well as wealth and asset management. From an earnings perspective, the most recent quarterly earnings in Q3 did beat the analyst consensus, which is certainly positive. Year to date, it's only up about 13.88%. actually in line with the industry. Regional banks have struggled a bit, right? As rates went up, a lot of the bonds that were on deposit there, they had banked in losses on their books. Some banks went under in 2023. We all remember what happened. And so the systemic stress within the regional banking system really led us to believe, okay, still, even though rates are coming down a bit, there could be some hidden risks here. If you're trying to get exposure, is this where you really want to be? Now, I mean, this name is trading at the upper end of where it's traded over the past 5 years, sitting at 2x price to book value. And its net interest income has really only grown 3.3% on an annualized basis. Its ROE sits where it's sat for the past 3-4 years at about 12%. And so the question is, okay, given that rates are coming down, are there any structural catalysts that can really drive Fifth Third Bank higher or the regional banking system more broadly? But for you specifically, if you don't have any financial exposure at all, I don't think that the one name you want should hold is a mid-cap regional bank, again, because of those outsized asymmetric risks, especially one that is currently trying to execute a merger, which tend to be, you know, frankly, historically, more mergers surprised to the downside than to the upside in the year following an acquisition. And so this all goes to say, if you're looking for financial exposure, I'd probably start a little bit higher on the food chain. That is Fifth Third Bancorp, ticker FITB. All righty, let's make it two in a row with TVK, the big question here.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Carl from Florida. I would like to get your assessment of a Canadian company, TerraVest, trades on the Toronto Stock Exchange under the ticker symbol T as in Tom, V as in Victor, K as in Kellogg, .T0. Thank you very much.
Okie dokie, let's take a look at TerraVest. As mentioned, trades on the Canadian Stock Exchange, the TSE. It's a $3.5 billion market cap company, so pretty small. What they do is they manufacture and sell industrial equipment and services to agriculture, mining, chemicals, utilities, and transportation. So pretty broad exposure here in terms of their customer base. It has, compared to the TSX, which is the Canadian Stock Exchange Composite, performed very well going back to 2019. I mean, this is the relative strength here. It's pretty crazy performance. It's up 37% year to date. It's up 22% over the past 52 weeks. It has outperformed pretty much every year going back to 2019. Earnings per share up, beat consensus on the most recent quarterly earnings. And so after big gains, the question is, what are valuations sitting at, right? Anytime we see a big gainer here, anytime we see a positive momentum name like this, we have to ask that question. Well, it's sitting at 47x price to forward-looking earnings. The high, really, is 49 over the past 5 years. So it's about as expensive as it has ever been. Now, is this justified? Maybe, but there's a bit of downside risk here that you're starting to see in terms of trend, right? There has been, over the past couple months, a downward trend, except for recently after earnings, had a bit of an outperformance, and then right before earnings, had a bit of strength. It's since tapered down a bit. Frankly, I think that the benefit to this name is how broad its exposure is in terms of its client base, right? It is selling to all sorts of businesses, meaning that should one sector struggle, should the cycle move against it, it's got a bit of broad exposure. Its fundamentals, certainly solid. Let's take a look at its debt position here. I mean, it's only sitting on about $800 million of long-term debt, bunch of assets, free cash flow starting to improve. I don't know, still a bit expensive for me, especially with free cash flow actually declining recently. So for now, I'd keep it on my watch list. That is TerraVest Industries, ticker TVK. You know what? Let's make it three in a row.
Thank you so much for everything you guys do. Your program is extremely informative for folks like us who are small investors. I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT. I would like to get an entry point into this company. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, I think we actually talked about Medtronic on Wednesday. And, you know, year to date, it's up 25%. It's up 21% over the past 52 weeks. It was actually positive today. For those of you who were not listening to the Wednesday show, or maybe haven't listened yet, Medtronic is a medical technology company that has all sorts of products, right? From cardiovascular to neurological to surgical to diabetes. Pretty well diversified amongst the groups, right? 37 cardio, 29 neuro, surgical 25. So well-diversified med tech business. And it's trading at the average of where it's been over the past 5 years on a price-to-earnings basis, on price-to-book, really across the board here. It had a bit of a rough 2024, but again, a solid 2025. You're seeing growth again, nearly 10% growth year over year in revenue. And so, you know, for us, we hold, as I mentioned, Medtronic in actually a couple of our strategies. We think within the devices space, it is one of the better names, and it's trading at the average of where it's been. So frankly, I think it's pretty well priced now. That is Medtronic PLC, ticker MDT. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, and that is to help you achieve your financial freedom through lots and lots and lots of education. Our work continues after this break. It is our final break of the week, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Invest Talk. I'm looking at an ETF and wanted to get your opinion. It's the Goldman Sachs NASDAQ GPIQ. Wanted to see if would this be a good one to get into, and I'll be listening to your podcast. Thank you.
GPIQ is the Goldman Sachs NASDAQ 100 Premium Income ETF. So what it does is it holds names within the NASDAQ 100, and it combines those equity investments with a call strategy. This is a covered call ETF. Again, interesting, because we just talked about this, in a way, on our holiday special. And this ETF is therefore going to get less of a return than the NASDAQ index is, but hedge a bit to the downside, right? That's the point of covered call strategies. For those of you who don't know, a covered call on an individual stock is when you buy a stock, you write a call option, and that gives somebody else that you are selling it to the ability to buy that stock at a price. And you in return get what is called a premium income. If the stock price goes above the strike price, obviously, if you are the investor who holds that call option, well, it's beneficial for you to buy the stock at the lower price, sell it for the higher one, right? So it gets called away. That's how your upside is capped. Your downside is hedged a bit because you're getting that premium income. The market goes down, you don't go down as much as that stock, right? Because you have the premium income, makes up for a bit of return. One issue is that investors then look at these things, these ETFs, and say, oh, well, the yield is high, because they're reporting the yield as the income from the premiums, as well as the yield of the individual stocks, meaning you're getting a long-term distribution yield of 9.7%. But that's where understanding the dynamics matters. Because if you're an investor and you're seeing a yield of 9%, you're probably thinking dividend. And a dividend is when you just hold something and you get money for holding it, right? That's the point of a dividend, returning money to shareholders. But this carries risks because those stocks can be called away. That being said, it doesn't mean covered calls are bad strategies. We actually have one ourselves. What I'm trying to get at is you should understand what you're holding here. So the NASDAQ 100 Premium Income ETF, it's a covered call strategy. NASDAQ 100 is its universe, meaning it's going to be highly concentrated in tech. 67.47% is technology. And it does it for a pretty cheap fee, I would say, relatively 35 basis points here. But you know, it doesn't mean you're not exposed to a lot of downside. You are highly concentrated within a couple names. The top 10 holds 55%, NVIDIA, Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet, Broadcom, names that tend to move in a correlated fashion. Meaning that if there's a bit of a pullback or a lot of a pullback within the AI space, this ETF could suffer greatly. So I think if you're trying to get a covered call strategy, it's best to do it on a more broadly diversified, less centrally exposed ETF so that you don't have the potential to have massive downside risk, especially given the reason why you hold some of these names is for that upside growth, which you're giving up. Goldman Sachs NASDAQ 100 Premium Income ETF, GPIQ, thanks for the call. Silver, up a lot, just like gold. And analysts have an expectation of a near-term Fed rate cut, adding this momentum. But the deeper driver is, as with what we're talking about with copper, a structural supply deficit, and it's lasted five consecutive years. Silver's demand isn't just coming from jewelry or coins. Industrial uses like electronics and solar panels have also grown rapidly. And unlike gold, its output is mostly a byproduct of mining, of not just gold itself, right? Gold, you mine gold. Silver, you mine other metals. And gold is, silver is the byproduct of that, making it difficult for producers to ramp up supply quickly when prices spike. Meanwhile, that massive stockpile built earlier this year by the US, driven by fears of potential tariffs, has artificially inflated inventories a lot, roughly tripling historic levels. That cushion's now shrinking. Analysts are warning it's masking deeper global shortage issues. So, while a lot of people are thinking about gold, the dynamics that affected the rise of silver are also likely to continue into the future. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get at iTunes and Spotify. While you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review, as those help grow the family greatly. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investment, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it's all really working and optimized for you, Justin and I talk to investors such as yourselves each and every day. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.